You are listening to The Darren O'Lean Show. I'm Darren. I've spent the last 20 years devoted to improving health, protecting the environment, and finding ways to live a more sustainable life. In this podcast, I have honest conversations with people that inspire me. I hope that through their knowledge and unique perspectives, they'll inspire you too. We talk about all kinds of topics, from amping up your diets to improving your well-being, to the mind-blowing stories behind the human experience and the people that are striving to save us and our incredible planet. We even investigate some of life's fatal conveniences, you know, those things that we are told might be good for us, but totally aren't. So here's to making better choices and the small tweaks in your life that amount to big changes for you and the people around you and the planet. Let's do this. This is my show, The Darren O'Lean Show. Welcome, everybody. How's it going? Thanks for tuning in. I'm Darren O'Lean. I'll be your pilot for this episode. Hook in and hold on. Keep your feet and your hands in at all times. And please, please enjoy the ride, because this is a ride. We have the infamous, the incredible human, Dr. Zach Bush on the show. So stoked. He's become a friend. We have crossing paths in many different directions. And at the end of the day, he's a great, loving, powerful, beautiful, smart human, putting words, thoughts, ideas into actionable things that are going to help navigate and change and balance the world as we know it, and at least start moving in a direction where more balance can be attained for all of us, not only on the microbiological scale, but also in the macro scale. And we come to realize from this discussion that it's all connected. And so I am stoked to get this information out. I am excited for all of you who don't know or haven't heard of Dr. Zach Bush. We get into things and had other several side conversations about trying to change the narrative of the healthcare system. We get into a little bit of that. Germ theory, catching something, or is it a terrain theory, meaning that the environment that we have in our body, in our ecosystems, in the way we take care of ourselves, epidemiological, the environment we live in, the people we have around us, the water we take in, the sleep that we have, the food that we take in, is that influencing our terrain? For all of you who don't know the breadth and the width and the magnitude of this triple board certified MD, I'm going to give you just a little bit. So he specialized in internal medicine, endocrinology, and hospice care, but his work in the nonprofit sector, in the human sector, Ion Biome, an incredible product dealing with the research of his scientific group studying the breakdown of glyphosate in our environment, in our systems, and how it's destroying our gut. I have a link, an affiliate link, so that you guys can get a discount for his supplements to help heal the gut. So we get into it. We talk a little bit about the COVID situation. We talk about the terrain theory versus germ theory and how viruses are actually sending us and giving us information. They've always been here. They're all around us in the numbers that you can't possibly imagine. So understanding health from a different perspective, from actually the perspective of the real science behind how we're supposed to be in balance with the environment, with our microbes, with absolutely the viruses, which you can't kill because they're not alive. They're just downloading information to us in the environment. So enjoy this episode. This is a deep one. This is a great one with my great friend, Dr. Zach Bush. For those of you who haven't heard of Zach or whatever, you're going to have to give your little starting story, because it's also infinitely powerful. And I love your story in terms of your genesis and your awakening within that. So
great.
Give us your start.
Yeah, I certainly, you mentioned the AMA there, and you know, I was dyed in the wool believer that, you know, these entities had been around for 80 years for all the right reasons, that we were really looking for the solutions to human disease at large. And that was, you know, a heady thing, as, you know, looking back, was, you know, barely a kid, you know, coming out of, you know, pre-med program at the University of Colorado, altruistic as all get out, you know. And I started in a pretty holistic space. I shifted from engineering into medicine when I had the opportunity to go over to the Philippines with an aunt of mine who was helping run a multinational group of midwives that was working on birthing babies in the Philippines and in the squats and most impoverished areas. And it was just an incredible transformation of my life to see the miracle of birth, to see, you know, healthcare being provided by this holistic group of women who were really helping educate these women around things like breastfeeding and the importance of nutrient delivery to these babies to prevent malnutrition and to build an immune system and all of this stuff. And so I thought maybe I could be a nurse though. And so I started going down that nursing pathway, then discovered the nurse practitioner route and thought I could do that. And that, to do that, you have to do your pre-med stuff. And so then I'm doing pre-med, and then somebody in my life came along and was like, you should just do the MD thing. It's only like one more year than a nurse practitioner. Unfortunately, that person had no idea what they were talking about. It's like, it took me another 17 years to complete my medical training after that. But, you know, it was a slippery slope of just wanting to do something that really impact humanity, I think. And if you fast forward through those 17 years, I ended up finding myself to be a technician within a pharmaceutical monopoly that was just still unseen by myself. I just understood this is where the money comes from to do research. And if I want to be an academic doctor, I need research dollars to be flowing in. And so I need to do a project that's relevant to the pharmaceutical industry to get funding. And then suddenly the, you know, recession/depression of 2008, 2010 unfolds in the country. The whole country collapses, you know, economically, and the government, you know, reverses funding on the General Clinical Research Center at the University of Virginia, where my research was all done through. And so I lose my funding. And so there's this cascade of events, 2008 to 2010. And what had been, you know, considered the number three endocrine program in the world suddenly dropped off the map. We went from 75 full-time faculty to less than 30 in just a 18-month period. And so it was just this collapse that nobody was really talking about. Everybody was talking about the housing market and all this, but we were losing academic freedom in those years. We lost, you know, a huge amount of the foundation that led to the ability to ask new questions. And coming out of that recession, most of the faculty that disappeared from the University of Virginia ended up in schools like the University of Indiana that nobody had heard of before as academic leaders, but were now funded by the pharmaceutical companies. So Eli Lilly, for example, bought an entire university and their med school, and was giving physicians funded labs, which means you never had to write another grant to try to fight for the NIH to fund your research, but now you were solely owned by the pharmaceutical industry.
I had no idea it was that deep. They literally just bought the
university. They bought the university, they owned the labs, they funded the labs, and that was the moment, you know, in that recession justified academia aligning itself not with a public funding source, but for pure pharmaceutical funding sources.
What?
And it wasn't at all limited to that University of Indiana. It was, you know, across the board, there was a new dependence and codependence of academia and pharmaceutical special interests in that moment. So, you know, of course, on the big banking side, the same thing happened. You know, when you start to see an old system collapse, it justifies what would have been considered illegal behavior just moments ago for damage control to help stabilize things that are too big to fail. And the pharmaceutical healthcare industry had claimed too big to fail. And so it got, you know, boosted up by all of these artificial economies that put us in a more, you know, indentured servitude, ultimately to drug development.
And the irony is you discovered vitamin A essentially destroying cancer cells right before all of that happened. It's like the easiest kind of application, non-drug application that you couldn't pursue anymore.
Yeah. And, you know, it's far from the only person knowing that. I mean, the vitamin A receptor happens to be the most ubiquitous receptor in the whole body, which is nobody talks about in nutrition. Like, did you know that every single hormone relies on, you know, somewhere in the cascade, a vitamin A receptor being bound to vitamin A? Like, it's unbelievable. The dependence of your body to do anything requires an activated vitamin A receptor. And so when you start to talk about, you know, what's an ideal diet? Protein versus fat versus carbohydrate. Oh, hell no. Like, if you don't have vitamin A in there, it doesn't matter what you're eating, you're dying. Your body cannot regenerate without, you know, these fundamental nutrients in your food. And when was the last time you saw vitamin A listed in a, you know, food package of real whole foods? We never, you know, because of the way the USDA has, you know, created our labeling system, we've never known the nutrients in our food. And so a carrot doesn't have to list whether it has vitamin A left in it or not because of its chemical or nutrient dense, you know, soil system it was grown in. We just don't know. And so if it says organic, we think, well, I hope that works, and we move forward. But as I left academia in 2010, I started a nutrition center to reverse chronic disease through food because I was introduced in 2008 to the work of, you know, Colin Campbell and Esselstein out of the Cleveland Clinic and all these guys for 45 years been proving that plant medicine could cure everything. And so I was so excited, you know, as a pharmaceutically minded doc, I was blowing my mind over this science. I was like, why didn't anybody tell me this? Like, what do you mean reverse diabetes? I went to the third best endocrine program in the world. Nobody told you reverse that. I just thought it needed more insulin. You know, you just think, you know, these simple things. And I was blown away. So in my, you know, super altruistic, super, you know, naive state, I jumped in 2010. And, you know, smartly, I jumped into a complete food desert to teach nutrition because I figured since I don't know anything about nutrition because I'm a doctor, I could at least go to a food desert where people are eating Twinkies and hot dogs off the spit at the local grocery store or at the local gas station as their main food intake. I could probably do better than that. And I was super humbled to find out I couldn't do better than that often. When I tried to give nutritious, you know, nutrient-dense foods to people who had been devoid of it for a generation, their guts couldn't handle that stuff. You can see inflammation markers go up on something as simple as kale when you give it to a gut that's not ready for it. And so it was this extraordinary realization that the long-term deprivation from nutrient density as a population has put us at this vulnerable phase where we don't even have the ability. We've forgotten the biologic intelligence of how to implement or integrate nutrient-dense foods into our bodies. And it's fascinating to realize that we have to train for that. Just as like we would train for a marathon, right. You got to train your gut microbiome to handle something as complex as kale.
Especially when you've been doing that standard American, even the worst of the standard American diet, and you've just destroyed all of the healthy bacteria and microbiome. You have no mechanisms to deal with the nutrient density anymore, the fibers and the complexities.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a startling thing to find out that, you know, the revolution, the scientific revolution that we're in the midst of right now, then will take us perhaps a couple generations to even begin to handle this news because it's so disruptive. But the profound discovery that we're making over the last 20 years of genomics is to find out that human health is not at the center, the human cell. At the center of human health is the microbiome. 40,000 species of bacteria, 300,000 species of parasite, hundreds of thousands of species of protozoa, 3.5 million species of fungi. That's at the center of human health, which means we were wrong about everything because we only studied cardiovascular disease in the structure of a sterile petri dish. We only studied cancer in a sterile petri dish. We have no idea what the relationship of a cancer cell is to the microbiome. And yet we know that the first injury that happens towards cancer now is a disruption of the microbiome of the gut. And it's so specific now by genomics that we can say, if you're missing this bacteria, you're going to get breast cancer. If you're missing this family of bacteria, you're going to get colon cancer. Okay. And so it's gotten that specific to find out that when we talk about cancer prevention, we're not talking about mammograms. We're talking about cancer prevention is about changing the flora and fauna within you. And so it's so fascinating to realize that just as we did in the 1600s with Galileo coming up with this super disruptive concept that the Earth was not at the center of the solar system, let alone the universe, that took centuries for us to get a hold of that. But that was just planet Earth. When you find out that you are not at the center of your health and that you are actually the result of this complex ecosystem, this literal galaxy, this little universe of life within you, so disorienting. Suddenly, somebody trying to sell you protein powder just doesn't make the same, it doesn't calculate the same way. It's like, the new question is, what does that protein powder do for my gut microbiome? Right. And if you can't answer that question, you don't yet know what kind of health that's going to create or what kind of vulnerability that's going to create. And so we have to reimagine now food itself as a relationship to solar system, sun in particular, and its implementation with chlorophyll, which are bacteria that live within the plant cells. And the chlorophyll, these plant plastids, which are basically the mitochondria within plants, the mitochondria within our cells make energy. And then those chlorophyll create enough energy for the plant to interact with fungi within the soil to create these weird structures like mycorrhizae and the whole infrastructure and architecture of what assembles really around like a coral reef, but within the soil to allow hundreds of thousands of species to start to interact intelligently into these super intelligent, hyper intelligent biologic systems. All of that is made possible not by human life. We just showed up 200,000 years ago, 4 billion years, marched along and created this level of hyperintelligence that would allow for the human genome to express itself in the way it does. 50% of that genome we already have found out is direct insert from viruses. You know, we would not have existed without the genomics of the bacteria, the fungi, and the protozoa slowly building the intelligence by swapping through the virome that genetic information into something organized into intelligent and adaptive life. Our response to that nature, our action towards that nature, is more antibiotics, more antivirals, more antifungals. That's the march of the AMA. That's the march of my industry of medicine, is let's kill nature. Human health must be the result of eliminating nature around us so we can fulfill this space. So in our manifest destiny as the smartest species on the earth, we can take it over. We can control it. And in that effort towards control, we've created our own demise.
So for years, maybe all most of my life, people have been asking me, what kind of foods do you eat? What kind of exercises do you do? What kind of water should I drink? All of these things and so much more we put into a 21-day program so that it can take you through a theme every day of knowledge, action, and then eating this delicious meals, working out, getting support, anchoring in these new habits so you can do what? So that you can kick ass, so you have the energy, the vitality to live the kind of life that you really want. That's what it's all about. So all in this app, we have grocery lists, we have education about real hydration and what greater oxygenation and the balance of alkalinization. All of these things we are diving into as you're heading down this hero's journey of implementation into a new life to give you the kind of life that you actually want. So join my tribe. All you have to do is go to 121tribe.com, sign up, and you get 3 free days. Join me on this hero's journey. Join the tribe. So much of your microbiome and virome work and what you've discovered has been in your own labs, right? So it's like you're not just throwing out stuff that you're theorizing and concluding. You've actually done that work. And some of the supplements that you're doing and some of the ancient bacterial information that you've discovered in this incredible, like, just think about that. That story that you said of that ancient bacteria that's sitting there is basically an antidote and a preemptive understanding of this glyphosate destructive molecule that actually has an antidote to it. And so what was that moment like when you see such a destructive molecule as glyphosate just terrorizing our digestive system, our immune system, and then you actually see that the bacteria and this ancient system has an antidote for some of this stuff, or if not all of it, if we get out of the way. What is that? What was that like? And what do we do here now as a society that is just infiltrated on many levels with glyphosate in our systems, and we don't even know, and it's at the core of sensitivities. And I mean, sensitivities and allergies are just at an all-time high everywhere you look, like you said. What do we do?
I mean, the experience of seeing that, I wish I could bottle up, because it's hard to describe. If I could just give a drop of that sensation to every human, we would be done with the whole problem, and we would only create solutions, because the sensation of that first time we saw it working in our microscope, the first time we saw gut cells know how to build a three-dimensional structure in a petri dish, you know, like kidney cells know how to build three-dimensional structures in a petri dish, let alone in the human body.
You're watching it
in real time, and it only takes seconds, you know, which is such a cool story too. You know, here we've for decades been destroying biology, and then you can watch it lace itself all back together in a matter of 3 to 4 minutes. It's just brain numbing, the complexity of coordination that's needed to do something that we would call healing. And so I wish everybody who is listening right now could understand the sheer complexity of biologic systems and its intelligence, and then have goosebumps to think that we could co-create with that. We could be a co-creative force on this planet for life. So far, we've only figured out how to extract and destroy it, that life thing that we talk about. But I can tell you that within you right now, if you would just close your eyes for a second as an audience member and just like come super present with me for a moment here, maybe, and just let me pass on the sensation I have in my body of just, there is so much electrical energy present within me right now because I have touched a truth. And that's all I've done is I've touched. I didn't create truth. I didn't create a product. I didn't create, you know, a discovery. I simply witnessed enormous amount of energy that is harnessed within each cell, that is reservoired within every single cell, that is capable of breaking forth within you right now to create life, to create energy, to create everything around you. And I just give that to you as a message of you are empowered. That King Arthur moment of a knight kneeling down to be endowed with the three taps of the spear on the sword on the shoulders and the head, just to say, you are now a knight, you know, you've been knighted. If I could just knight each of you as a woman empowered, as a man empowered, I knight you with your capacity for healing. I am here to tell you, you are a sovereign being endowed with all of the capacity for life to burst forth from, that it would align with your sole purpose, that you showed up here with 7.8 billion other people. Just receive that for a moment and know that you are now free to go create. You are now free to go do what you would do. There's nobody that can separate you from this power within you. This is an energy force. There's a complex biology within you that is so sovereign and so independent that it is held at a fractal level, meaning that every atom within you has the knowledge of the whole. Every cell within you has the knowledge of the whole. And when connected to that, you become this force of change, because in the end, biology will only do change. Its whole purpose, we learn from the virome, is to be an adaptive, regenerative organism that's sole purpose seems to be to create more biodiversity to manifest a higher intelligence through that biodiversity. And so the concepts of adaptation, meaning constant change, powered by a genome that's constantly updating through the virome to create a higher intelligence and a higher biodiversification within us, around us, and at the genetic level, getting these updates constantly. I'm excited to tell you that there's 10 to the 31 viruses. That's 10 million times more than our stars in the entire universe. 10 to the 31 viruses in the air that you're breathing with your eyes closed right now. You're breathing in these viruses, and a significant portion of those is entering cells throughout your body to update your genome to become more adaptive, more resilient, more regenerative. There's another 10 to the 31 viruses in the ocean. And so for all you surfers out there, or the swimmers, or those of you that are out there fishing those oceans, I want you to know that you swim in a sea of viral data that is there to update life on Earth, to create the next big download for genomic diversification, for more intelligence to happen. For you farmers out there, for you gardeners out there, for you children that love to dig in the soil, there's 10 to the 30 viruses again sitting in the soils of our Earth. We are literally in a stew of genomic information that is there to empower you towards a higher state of being, to create a more intelligent genetic backbone to the life that you present each day, that you manifest from your genome. You are more sovereign than you can imagine. And that level of sovereignty does not need an ethic to believe by or to try to live by. There is so much integrity that ethics becomes irrelevant. Sovereignty is synonymous with that integrity. You are practicing the highest level of integrity as a human being when you come in touch with that sovereign capacity for regeneration and energy production in your body. And so what are you going to set your hand to? It will be beautiful and it will manifest life if you stay in this sense of power. So how that's manifested in my life begins in relationship. And I used to think of myself as an entrepreneur or a business development guy. I now know that my highest purpose is to attract other human beings that are vibrating at this high level of creativity, to bring them together and then create a company to give them an excuse to create something beautiful together. The company is there to give us the opportunity to create that fellowship of human mind, that fellowship of human creativity, to do our highest purpose together, to build something greater than ourselves. So rethink yourself as a connected being, a connected cell within a greater organism of humanity that then is powered by a greater life force of the microbiome and the Earth's water, soil, and air systems to capture more energy, that energy then to be trafficked towards creativity, that creativity to align itself with nature for the first time in human history. Our ingenious inventions need no longer to control and extract from nature, but to become additive to and work within the templates of function of nature herself. And suddenly we'll see ourselves as a co-creator within this network of life that we have. Find new relationships. Stop thinking of yourself as an isolated cell. Realize that you have the capacity to be a connected cell.
And that's the truth. Undeniable. And I'm just aware, and my heart, right, is pumping. And it's like we've disconnected so much from that truth and given our sovereignty over through systems, through people, and even relationships. Make me happy, provide this to me. If you don't do this, I'm angry at you. All of this stuff that we've given that power away. I mean, it's almost like we're narcissistic so much. We've cut ourselves off of our own nature because we think we're either bad or shame or bad or wrong, or we have to do something, we're not good enough. But what you're saying is life is infinitely powerful and driving itself forward, and we've cut ourselves off from all of that. So one thing I'd love for you to unpack a little bit is the virome, because this beautiful relationship that we have with information, with the information that's being shared in the 10 to the 30, 10 to the 31, 10 to the 30 viruses all around us, microbes all around us, in us, through us, delivering the symbiosis to which we've come from, the symbiosis we have with all living creatures and energy and humans and non-humans. And explain and unpack that a little bit in terms of how these viruses actually work in our life, and that they're not bad, they're not wrong, that they're a part of us, and that by understanding that, maybe we can dampen some of the fear and the separation.
Yeah. So this, you know, gets to a couple of critical mistakes that we made in our intellectual model that we had of germ theory that you mentioned earlier, Antoine Beauchamp. And you know, he was very much actively debating Louis Pasteur in the 1860s, 1880s, you know, late 19th century there. Those 30, 40 years of their academic debate were really looking at, you know, Pasteur's theory of germ theory, which is, you know, something like cholera could be put into water and make people sick. And Beauchamp kept recognizing that, well, you can put it in the water, you can make a few people sick, but why do most people not get sick? You know, and so he was doing this incredible work of asking the other question, which we asked earlier, why aren't the 60% of people getting sick? You know, what do they have? And what he came to understand was that they had a complex ecosystem. They had a complex system that was functioning at a very high level, and that was keeping them resilient and keeping them from disease. And it didn't seem to be matter what kind of disease he studied. He was doing twin studies to show that, you know, with identical, you know, protoplasm. They didn't have the words DNA at the time. They didn't have words of genetics at the time. But he knew in the 1800s that here's two identical twins, and if I put them in different environments, they develop different disease patterns or vulnerabilities. And so he was proving that it's not the protoplasm of who you are, or, you know, this thing that comes and attacks you. It's what you're expressing today as far as your strength or vulnerabilities. And so he was really the first one to really develop this terrain theory on a grand scale. And he was far from the only one. There was a whole, you know, nearly half of academia believed in terrain theory over germ theory this time. But then, you know, we have World War One, and World War One, we go and contaminate the planet on a scale that had never happened before. In the late 1800s, the industrialized nations of the time did something brilliant, which they signed a universal pact that nobody would develop chemical warfare. The chemistry that was being discovered in the late 1800s, we were discovering things like mustard gas and all these highly toxic things to biology for the first time. We were creating these first synthetic molecules that would become the toxins that we know today. And so in the late 1800s, this was signed by all the nations, you know, we won't do, and then World War One happens. And of course, you know, all of a sudden, all the industrial nations are making the chemical warfare that 20 years earlier they had said they wouldn't do. They start to justify because of the massive loss of scale of life being lost in the war, just as we would 25, 30 years later justify the creation of the nuclear weapons because of the catastrophic loss of life happening under unresolving war. And so we justified this. And so we created a global distribution of chemical warfare in 1916 and 17. And then we created, you know, a narrative of, oh my God, there was a Spanish flu that came through and killed 10 to 15% of the population of Europe and many other nations in the very same time that we had actually poisoned the earth through chemical warfare. Wow. We turned it into a narrative of, oh, a virus attacked. No, we just poisoned the crap out of the European population that was the epicenter of the World War One. And by poisoning that population, they became very vulnerable to respiratory disorder because they didn't have the innate immunity left because we had poisoned those systems of balance. And so this virome that had been life-giving since the origin of life suddenly became threatened, and we changed the terrain. And so we did the same thing with polio 20, 30 years later. We blamed this polio virus, but there had never been endemic polio in the United States at any significant level until World War II gets over and we create a middle class in the United States for the first time. And one of the first things we do with the middle class post-World War II era is we create swimming holes in these neighborhoods and have all the kids all summer long swimming together in poorly sanitized pools. And they all develop a fecal, you know, born virus of polio. Because we not only gave them a natus for transmission, we took away their tonsils. And so post-World War II, we removed the upper respiratory immune system from children en masse by both radiation. We were radiating by X-ray tonsils that were getting large, you know, showing that there was an immune reactivity going to the environment as we created chemical foods. We created those TV dinners for the first time in the 1950s. We started destroying nutrient density, and these kids became prone to upper respiratory illness. And so their immune system starts to activate. So we'd radiate with X-ray their tonsils, or we would just cut them out surgically. And so we took away their upper respiratory immune system and put them in pools that were poorly sanitized, and suddenly all summer long people are getting polio. And so we create the polio epidemic, and then we have to, you know, create a story of recovery. And anybody who's looked at this history closely knows that the rates of polio in the country were already going down as we started to understand we needed to chlorinate pools and we needed to, you know, change the germ kind of environment and transfer capacity for fecal-borne things in those water systems. And suddenly polio was decreasing. And then the Salk Institute comes out with the polio vaccine. Things are already improving and everything else. And at the same time we come out with the polio vaccine, we come out with some important studies that show that kids that have their tonsils removed actually have poorer health outcomes in the first couple of decades of adulthood. And so we stop doing that. So we give back kids their tonsils. We stop, you know, contaminated pool activities, and suddenly polio goes away. And we then say, well, this Salk vaccine for polio worked. It eliminated polio. It eliminated polio from a place where polio never existed before. And so all we did was change the terrain back to some previous state, really, mm-hmm. That had kept us in a resilient and adaptive relationship to the polio virus up until that time. So over and over again, we can tell these stories of, you know, failure to understand that when a virus presents a problem for a population, it means that we just changed our relationship to the virus. The virus has always been present. Polio has always been around. Mm-hmm. Polio will always be around. We can't eradicate polio. Mm-hmm. There's still, you know, anything that you can think of. We've simply changed our relationship to it. And this whole thing that's going around, this concept of herd immunity, that's missing the point. Herd immunity is not about us creating antibodies against some virus. Herd immunity means that we're functioning at such a high immune system level that we're in balance with everything. We're not killing things. We're not eliminating things from our environment. Our body can deal with flu all day long. It can deal with coronavirus all day long. It can deal with HIV all day long, and we don't have anything happen to us. The third one must be freaking you out right now. You say, okay, flu, okay, then HIV, what the hell, that's a bad one. Well, this incredible study was just done finally looking at the genomic prevalence of HIV in the bloodstream of Europeans, Americans, and Asians, which are supposed to have the lowest rates of HIV in the world. And we found an enormous amount, 0.6% of the population with HIV. And yet none of them have AIDS. None of them have this thing. They're in balance with the HIV virus. It was 5 times more HIV than there was influenza detectable in those blood samples in 8,000 patients. And so it's like, we have this relationship. We've waited till people show up with AIDS and say, we found HIV in their bloodstream, therefore HIV must be killing them. But our blood bank data can go back to 1959 now. And in 1959 specimens, we can find HIV. We didn't develop AIDS until the early 80s.
Wow.
And so we changed our relationship to the virome, again, post-World War I, post-World War II. So we had Spanish flu, then we had polio. And then in the 1976 to 1982, Hep C, HIV, and all 8 of the common herpes viruses, including, and then add CMV, which is the mononucleosis, or EBV, mononucleosis one, and CMV, cytomegalovirus. You add these ones on there, and we changed our relationship to all these. They suddenly took off in the blood bank data out there. Suddenly, they become very prevalent throughout Western society. So what happened between 1976 and 81? Those were the years that we introduced Roundup or glyphosate into our food systems and water systems. And so we fundamentally changed our relationship to the virome again. What did we just do in the last couple of years? What set us up for this? And what set us up for this current coronavirus thing is a change in the air. And so we contaminated our air at higher levels than any time in history with something called PM2.5, which is tiny little carbon particulate that's produced by coal-powered plants, our transportation sector, our energy sector at large, and importantly, agriculture. And so poor agricultural management of soil systems and ends up producing a lot of this PM2.5. And viruses bind to PM2.5 abnormally. And so you get clumping of viruses. So suddenly in a single breath, you don't take in a few million. You can take in quadrillions of viruses that are clumping on these PM2.5s. So we lost our balance with the virome. And the big trigger for this event was the fires of Australia poured more PM2.5 in the atmosphere than any time in history, in recent history. And so we have this new carrier. And we have more antibiotics and pesticides, herbicide being used in the Chinese food markets than ever in history. And we create the pressure for new viral information out of that extinction level antimicrobial use. And so we create viral information to update the world. And then we give an abnormal carrier of PM2.5 and we create a pandemic. Mm. And so we're going to keep doing this. We're seeing this new, you know, uptick in Idaho right now, the highest rates of coronavirus happening in the last week or two in, you know, Sun Valley, Idaho, and all this. Why that? Well, because they're right in the smoke trail of the most massive California fires that we've had in recorded history. Oh, wow. That dumped PM 2.5 into the entire Western United States at a level we've never seen before. And so now we say, oh, coronavirus is increasing in prevalence. No, coronavirus is stable. It's been here for years now. Mm-hmm. And so it's stable. What keeps changing is the terrain in which it interacts with the human biology. Mm-hmm. And so we are becoming sick, not because coronavirus is bad, but because, in fact, we've come into a very unhealthy relationship to it for the perturbation of the soil, water, and air systems.
Many of you who follow me know I've spent most of my life searching for the healthiest foods on the planet. If you look hard enough, there are a few unknown, extraordinary foods around the world that people still don't know about. And a few years ago, I came across my favorite superfood discovery of all time, Barooka's nuts. When I first tasted them, my eyes lit up. The taste alone just absolutely blew me away. But after sending them to the lab, which I do, and getting all the tests, I realized they're the healthiest nuts on the planet. Like, no other nut even compares. They have like an unusually high amount of fiber, and they're off the charts in super high antioxidants and have few calories than any other nut. Like, it's jam-packed with micronutrients. But they're not just good for you, they're really good for the planet. Most other nuts require millions of gallons of irrigated water, but Barooka trees require no artificial irrigation. Baroocas are truly good for you, good for the planet, and good for the world community. It's a win all the way around. I really think you'll love them, so I'm giving all of my listeners 15% off by going to baroocas.com/Darren. That's baroocas.com/Darren. D-A-R-I-N. I know you will enjoy.
And I heard you for the first time. I was freaking out because there was a way that you're speaking that was heart first, and then with all of this great wisdom. Of course, intellect, but wisdom. And that's where that intersection between the mind and the heart, and that's wisdom. And the wisdom that was coming out with that connection, I think is one of the most powerful ways that you in particular have come to sit in. And I just so appreciate that, because you're not intellectually telling people, and you're not ungroundedly, not to say that living in your heart is ungrounded, but that intersection between we're living here, we're in this body, we're in this interaction within this complexity, miraculous, unbelievable life flying around this galaxy 263,000 miles an hour or whatever that, like, we have to continue to provide that wisdom to people. And I just wanted to say that because you have this balance that I don't think many people have cultivated. And your work plus your heart-centeredness has created a platform, I think, that needs to be shared more and more, and you're doing it. But I just want to say thank you for everything that you've done and everything that you're continuing to do. And I'm touched by the amount of work that you've physically done, but I'm also touched by the human that you are, and the miraculousness that you see life in through all your experiences.
I appreciate that. I believe that what has come to pass in my life is that has allowed for the amplification of my heart message is the sudden relaxation that happened when I found out that what people were responding to, whether it be in my science lectures to doctors or to podcasts to the public, wasn't actually me. They were responding to the space between my words. And I kept hearing, you know, getting down off a stage, things that I didn't even say. Of like, how'd you figure that out? And it turns out they were listening to themselves. All I was really doing was providing enough space for them to break out of the current narrative, that their current paradigm was held frozen for a moment, such that they could step out of it and step out of that box. And suddenly they were hearing their own wisdom and truth. And so I've seen this with you in every conversation I have with you. I have this experience with, you know, virtual groups who will, you know, send their feedback through social media or whatever avenues. The wisdom that is coming through that you're sensing is you. You're literally hearing your own truth. And you know, I'm in some sort of hallowed ground that any of that would be attributed back towards me. Like, it's really privileged space to be able to hear so much gratitude back from humanity and everything else. But I just want to keep redirecting that back out to remind you all that if you hear anything that resonates, you're hearing yourself. You're resonating because you are the A string in, on that violin that's now vibrating to the A string that I just plucked. And so you are the vibrational energy that you're responding to. So if you feel hope and the experience of levity starting to happen within you during this podcast, despite the horrific crap that I'm telling you, you're actually feeling more hopeful at moments. You're feeling more light within you than you did. And yet I'm telling you that we're heading for a cliff. We're going to die. We're doing this. But you feel better for it because you know that you're alive right now and you showed up right now. The tipping point of human history, 7.8 billion souls, not people, 7.8 billion souls showed up to animate those bodies into a new action and connect. And so whether we're talking about the virome, which is the communication network of life on Earth, and it's how we communicate across microbiome to humans, et cetera. And so there's genomic communication. Then there's the carbon metabolite communication that we talked about earlier that is made by the bacteria and the fungi, the soils and in our gut that we can harness and put those into food supplements or dietary supplements, doesn't matter. Any of this, we're always talking about communication. And so now you're saying thank you for communicating to the world through verbs and through, you know, this talk. And the reality is the communication is only as good as it is received. You know, I can put out many waveforms in the form of voice and it will create nothing without an ear on the other side to interpret it in the way it will interpret it. And it's only going to really be in its full functionality if the 7 billion ears don't hear that differently. We need it to hear differently. We need every person to walk away with a different message. And, you know, as we look at this thing that we call death, you know, that's the final freedom from the fear and the guilt that we've been carrying around with us is, what if somebody you love does get the coronavirus? And what if the job you have does get lost? And what if there's a sudden collapse of energy? Well, if you take that for a moment of regeneration rather than a moment of fear and guilt, you will learn something really profound, which is there's freedom on all sides of the veil. And in my hospice work, I was blessed to be able to work for a hospice agency for a number of years. And, you know, it was 80 patients a week being admitted to our service to be, you know, shepherded through this dying process in the weeks to come. And you can get admitted to hospice with a prognosis of less than 6 months to live. But the sad reality is we're so slow to pull that trigger of resources for our patients. It's usually 3 weeks. And so on average, these people are dying within 3 weeks of admission. So the amount of life you're seeing transform and go through this death and dying process in a hospice organization is pretty profound. And again and again and again, I found, especially in my patients that weren't drugged, and my patients that weren't in kind of a fog of narcotics, were telling us amazing things. We're telling their family members beautiful stories. And we were seeing reconciliation and healing of decades old, you know, broken relationships and hard feelings and all of that just melting away in this heart-centered moment of rebirth of this individual finding out that they didn't do anything wrong. Their whole life was on purpose. And for all the chaos and the mess that was maybe defining it at the time, it was all in purpose. And they find out, I was just here to love you for a moment. And I did love you. And I still love you. And I'm going to go to the other side of this thing that we call life. And I'm going to carry my love for you. And when a child hears their mother say that, they are transformed. And that child will then say something different to their children. And before their death moment, they will start a regenerative process. And so I started to become convinced that we were mistaking this thing we call death as an endpoint, when in fact, it's the beginning of something beautiful. And again, we can turn our attention to the microbiome to learn something beautiful out of this. Is a single tree that falls on your property here, massive fire rips through here a couple years ago. Your live oaks are standing and thriving, which is a really cool story in and of itself there. But those that died and collapsed on the ground, some recent genetic studies are showing us that a single tree that falls on the soil will rebirth 100,000 species in its first year as it decomposes. So one species into 100,000 species. And we call that death. That's the beginning of life. And so I want you to think about this if you own a company. If you own a company, for every dollar you burn, what are you creating out of that dollar? And for every dollar you gain, what are you going to create with that? And so out of the death and the life of dollars around you, how are you going to transit that energy? And so we have found great success in our company that every dollar that we're making from our dietary supplement line for out of our biotech, we're pumping back into new areas of communication. So we created a nonprofit Farmers Footprint that's helping farmers communicate together, and the consumers talk to those farmers, and consumers start to talk to differently, which then changes CPG companies and their behavior. And suddenly you have, you know, big chemical ag godfathers saying, I want to do something different. I want to be part of this future that we all want for ourselves and for our children and grandchildren. And so there's this opportunity, and I find so much more reward as a business person who realizes that any dollar flowing towards me is new energy I can harness for biodiversification within my portfolio of companies. And so we have an energy company, we have a software company, we've got, you know, all this opportunity to keep channeling new information, new energy into new ways of thought and create more space for these future generations to create more differently and ultimately decentralize all of these systems of education, communication, energy, technology, transportation. Decentralize all of that through the brilliance of a child's mind and let these children lead us into the future. And we need to also adopt for ourselves a childlike mind. If everybody could walk away from this saying, holy crap, I knew nothing walking into this situation, then you're at the beginning of truth. And then you're at the beginning of my truth every day as I wake up being like, I don't even know how to run a company. And I got 12 companies. That seems like that should be a problem. But these companies are self-generative. I don't have to know how my body works because it's 70 trillion cells empowered by 1.4 quadrillion bacteria powered by 14 quadrillion mitochondria. I don't know how to do life. I don't know how to be alive right now, but that's okay because I've surrendered that to the hyperintelligence of life itself. And so turn over the intelligence of your companies to all of your employees. Let there be a creative force there. Turn every dollar into its own creative space. What does that dollar want to do? Where does it want to flow to? Instead of trying to hoard that in a bank account somewhere, set it loose. Where does that dollar want to go? What does it want to create? Because ultimately, money is just a modern conflagration of energy. It's literally an energy flow. And so where are you going to allow your energy to flow? And that's one of the funnest things I'm doing right now is creating these large philanthropic funds to power up what we're calling the human resiliency fund. And the human resiliency fund is about creating a body of science that shows synergistically how the innate immune system is created out of the conflagration of all these species. And then we've got on the for-profit side, Biome Capital launching to realize that money from all over the world right now wants to flow into regenerative systems, but it's disorganized. And so what if we put a team of thought leaders together to organize a strategic hit on the infrastructure and communication between farmers, CPG companies, and consumers to immediately, we're talking about overnight, create a regenerative supply chain for every brand out there? How do we create sneakers that are made of regenerative soil systems? How do we create food? How do we create the additives to your fuel? And so our energy company is focused on taking farm waste and putting that into biodiesel, because the number one input, you know, chemical input into a farm is not glyphosate, it's actually diesel. So how do we take the farm off the teat of the oil and gas industry? We allow them to become their own gas industry with biodiesels out of their own property. Decentralized, decentralized, decentralized. And the money wants to follow that right now. So if you have a family agency or a family fund or a family foundation or family office controlling the wealth, or your corporation looking to turn yourself into a B Corp or whatever it is, let me tell you that regenerative systems are going to be the future. And if you're not actively finding, you know, a manager for your money that's looking for regenerative outlets, you're going to miss a tide of revolution. We have, just in the healthcare sector, we're going to reorganize $4 trillion industry. Just in the United States alone, $4 trillion healthcare industry is about to pivot. You want to be a future of that. A $1.8 trillion food system is about to pivot. You want to be a part of that future. And so if you carry wealth today, make it work for our future that we want and make that create space for our children. And so engage with humanity. And that's the short answer, is how do we start to heal? The second law of thermodynamics is irrefutable. And it has been proven at the most microscopic level of the atom itself, all the way up to entire solar systems and galaxies. And the second law of thermodynamics says that any system left in isolation increases its chaos. The chaos that we feel within humanity today, whether we look at it's our social consciousness or our political consciousness, the chaos that we've created, the conflict we've created, is for our isolation. We are simply following the second law of thermodynamics. If we end the isolation, reconnect to our nature, we will think differently, we will create differently, and we will solve for the thing that we call humanity and the chaos it carries.
Bam. Dude. I love that. And that's the message that we need to move everybody. I mean, even that sense of a dollar. What's your dollar doing? Where is it going? What does it want? What does it want to create? And that's the generative, creative power we need to unleash back on the planet. We have to stop this whole idea of controlling and thinking we're controlling everything, right? And just let nature happen and then sit back and enjoy it.
Wow, that was an awesome conversation.
Thanks, brother.
I'm going to go now and to CVS and ironically get my COVID test so that I can get on an airplane and go to Hawaii.
No.
Understand that. So,
do you really?
That's my next stop. And so, you know, that's just, I want to say that because you're going to walk out of this conversation in an elated state. And I want you to keep that elation when you have to go fit into a society that's doing the idiocy. You know, when we eliminate logic from our public policy and you have to live within that reality, there's going to be a temptation to slip back into depression. So I invite you into a state of humor as you exit this podcast and go back out into life around you. Please try to laugh, because it is humorous that we take ourselves so seriously that we thought we could take over the world and control it.
Right.
That sense of humor will help you through. It'll help me through. So embrace me in your laughter today. Embrace me in your hugs today as I go engage with a bureaucracy that's trying to inflict the common narrative on us all the time. So stay free of it. Stay in humor.
Yeah.
And let's keep moving.
Amen. Thanks, brother.
What a fantastic episode. So tell me, what is one thing you got out of today's conversation? If this episode struck a chord with you and you want to dive a little deeper into my other conversations with incredible guests, you can head over to my website, darrenoline.com, for more episodes and in-depth articles. Keep diving, my friends. Keep diving. This episode is produced by my team at Must Amplify, an audio marketing company that specializes in giving a voice to a brand and making sure the right people hear it. If you would like or are thinking about doing a podcast, or even would like a strategy session to add your voice to your brand in a powerful way, go to www.mustamplify.com/Darren. That's www.mustamplify.com/Darren.